Data Mesh Radio is provided as a free community resource from DataStax. Welcome to Data Mesh Radio, produced and hosted by Scott Hurlman, the founder of the Data Mesh Learning Community. Data Mesh Radio is a vendor-independent resource for learning more about Data Mesh. Let's jump in. In this episode, I interview Dan Demers, the co-founder and CEO of the Dataware platform / data fabric provider, Cinci. I asked Dan to come on specifically to talk about data-centric application development. From what I've seen from the interviews so far that I've done about schema and data contracts and data testing, one of the biggest pain points in data seems relatively universal. The difference between the operating model, you know, the way the data is stored in operational systems for serving the needs of the applications, and the data model that those domains are sharing for analytical purposes, it's pretty big. The operational data model also needs to evolve pretty constantly, but the data consumers are reliant on a more steady model. So if you don't have some way of preventing breaks when there's a change in the operational model, it breaks the data model as well. And so how do you balance those changes between what the needs of the applications are and changing the operational schema and what the needs are of the data consumers? Specifically, the question I was wondering is data-centric application development a good approach to solving that challenge? From the conversation, I would conclude that my answer right now is maybe. It deserves more in-depth investigation. There are a few people really pushing the concept, but best practices will be hard to come by. They're just aren't a lot of people doing this just yet. So it is pretty bleeding edge. And as Matt Darwin had talked about in his interview as well, you don't want to be on too many bleeding edges or doing too much transformation all at once. So I think it's something to really consider and look deeper into. I will be doing a deeper delve into this topic combined with the topic of domain-driven design for data in some further interviews in the second half of January and into a little bit of early February. Specific to this interview, Dan shares his view that applications should simply leverage data, not create and store their own versions. That way, organizations do not create the same data repeatedly with slightly different variations, and you know it just creates more confusion than is necessary versus creating that information once and sharing it with the applications. He argues that if data is really the valuable resource the industry is claiming it is, it should be the centerpiece of how you're doing your application design as well as your data and analytics design. He argues that data integrations are one of the biggest pain points as to why data is so hard for companies to do right, and instead that you should send access to data instead of send copies of the data. We dig a bit into how an organization could get started if they are bought into a data centricity model, a data aware platform type model, and to kind of short circuit that, it's a big push of a larger group of people. It's got to be more of a top down. It's not a real skunk works type approach. And it's not going to be simple for the organization really to undertake. We also briefly touched on the need for better standards in sharing data within and across organizations. Dan talked about being involved in the CIM, so there's more information in the interview and a link in the show notes. Overall, I think it will give you a lot of food for thought. So thanks, Dan, again, and hope everybody enjoys this one. With that bottom line up front done, let's go ahead and jump into this interview. Okay, I've got Dan Demers here, who's the co-founder and CEO of Cinchi, and I'm really excited about this interview because Dan is somebody who's been out there talking a lot about the concept of kind of data-centric application development. So I'm really excited to learn more about that. Dan, could you give a little bit of an intro background to yourself, and then we can jump into?
Sure, yeah. So first of all, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here. So, I'm Dan, I'm the CEO, co-founder. My background prior to founding Cinchi was I used to work in a bunch of big banks, spent about 15 years in financial services, 11 of those were at Citigroup. Through that's where I met my co-founder, and we saw firsthand the problem that ultimately we set out to solve, which is eliminating this wacky concept of integration. And then we created basically the Cinchi platform and brought it to market, and we've now been in market for about 3 years. And I'd also just say that I've been a follower of the data mesh community, and it's been exciting to see it all come together and get to where it is today. So we're very excited about where this is all going. So yeah.
And at some point, you know, Cinchi is a data fabric solution. So at some point, you know, the data fabric versus data mesh debate, that isn't a real debate. We should have you back on to talk about how we can, the differences in the concepts, but also you can build a data mesh with a data fabric. It's totally fine. Like it's totally a viable solution. The reason why I wanted to have Dan on now, especially, was as I've been digging into these, the data contract, data testing, schema contracts stuff, what I just keep hearing is this concept of so many of the problems in data are that the rug keeps getting pulled out from underneath the people who are in data. The upstream changes. And when you think about an application, they have to be able to evolve what they are doing. You have to have that evolution possible. But when you have that refactor, there isn't a great way for people to prevent those downstream or those changes in that application from changing the way that the data is also shared downstream. So it's just been something that I wanted to dig into more, and I've been seeing some people talking about data-centric application design, and a couple of people had mentioned, Dan, you specifically. So I wanted to have you on to talk about that. Could you give a little bit of background as to what you've seen or what you think is the high-level problem set around that, around the changes really impacting people?
Yeah, I think you honestly hit the nail directly on the head is the fact that schema changes, it evolves, and you can try and moderate and mitigate and minimize the amount of such change, but what you're actually doing is constraining the ability for an organization to become intelligent, because the evolution of schema is what enables humans to be intelligent. It's plasticity. So you need a model that enables schema to change. Data that was linked to this data set is now linked to this data set, and you know, full name is now split from into two fields. And you need this evolution, and you need it to be enabled not only within the data products, but essentially anywhere where data is created. That is the problem. The controls that we put in place to prevent code from breaking as a result of such change creates this limiter, this bottleneck on the ability for an organization to make change. It's basically putting speed limits because the cars can crash. So the question becomes, how do you make it so that the cars can't crash such that you can remove those speed limits and enable evolution at full throttle?
What have you seen people try that you don't think that worked? And maybe we can kind of go through Abhi had talked about having, you know, this domain model and the persistence model, right? Like what is the application actually storing, and that you have a domain model and that you may have that name split is kind of one of the most common ones, but that you just say, okay, I'm aware of what my downstream consumers are, so I'm going to keep a full name field. And even though the application is doing the name split, I'm also going to keep the full name field of just the concatenation for the new people that are coming in. But it gets more and more complicated, and you're going to end up at some point having to refactor. So like with that approach of, okay, I'm trying to prevent at least breaking changes to my domain model, the model that I'm sharing relative to data consumers, where have you seen that has its limits, or how has that struggled?
So that ultimately is moving in the right direction, at least in my opinion. It's what it requires, though, is a protocol, a contract, and not a contract on the schema, but a contract on how to enable the schema evolution without breaking code between the two parties that are connecting and linking their data. But first of all, that approach is definitely moving beyond the traditional approach, which is like if you think of a microservices architecture where, you know, if you take a puristic vision of that, your data is siloed within each microservice. And the idea of data existing in the context of a service such that it never gets reused by any other context is of course, flawed. The data is all connected. It's all linked, right? So the fact that we're now talking about linking and connecting data across, whether it's across applications or across data products or across domains, is actually a step forward versus the older fashioned way of linking just the code together and then the data sits behind the code. That's app centricity at its core. But coming back to your question around enablement of essentially what you want is you want to enable schema evolution to take place within a thing. That thing could be a data product, could be an application, could be anything that ultimately needs to interact with data, store data, access data, generate data. And you want to enable other applications or other contexts to use that data, but perhaps refer to it differently, and like first name, last name versus full name. In order to achieve that, you do need a common protocol between the two systems that are interacting with each other, if that makes sense. So like one of the things that that we're doing is we have our platform called Tinchi, which we present as a dataware platform. Dataware being the realization of the vision of data centricity, but dataware itself is bigger than Tinchi as a company, right? So we're working on the establishment of standards. Like one of them is what we call zero copy integration. Is how do you move the world to a model where applications, be them operational or analytical in nature, can link and connect data such that that data can be owned by other departments, other organizations, other companies, other individuals, and not be at the mercy of schema evolution causing your logic that you've built on top of that model to break. So it does require standards. Now, in absence of a global international open standard within an organization, you can create such a standard. But you're kind of left on your own to do that today. But it does require that. Yeah.
Okay. And so, yeah, I guess I did kind of skip ahead to somebody that's doing something a little bit more advanced, exactly what you talked about. I don't like as much when people talk about the, data mesh is treating data as a product instead of as a byproduct, because it does feel a little contrite, but that kind of is the way that microservices approach treats it. It's that the application is not just the first order concern, it is the concern. It is not first order concern and data is the second order concern. It's that what you're having is whatever the application is changing its data storage, its schema, its whatever you want to think about, that everything downstream just has to deal with it. And this is where I think I was really against the modern data stack. And now I've really come around to very much empathizing with people that are doing the modern data stack, because it's the ground underneath them keeps getting just completely shifted. All the upstream is changing. And so they're just finding a way to be productive when they understand that everything might break, but that it's not something that they can control for the upstream, right? So if you want to be productive, you have this. Mm-hmm. So you talked about kind of data-centric application design and data centricity. Mm-hmm. How do you think about application design within that? So one thing that I'm finding is there is just an unrelenting pace to application design right now. Just absolutely, you cannot slow that down. And whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, I haven't really come to a great conclusion around. But with data centricity, that concept, how much work do you have to do up front versus how much can you think about, you know, what if someone right. were to start to look at this, are there devs going to be pulling their hair out and screaming, or is this a something where they're like, oh, this is actually pretty easy and useful? Or how do you change their thought process to move from this? Because I think at the end of the day, I've been saying 2022 is the year of data as a product, not just the data mesh concept of it, but just overall how we think about that. And then 2023 is the year where people start to go, okay, we just have to start from the data because everything keeps breaking otherwise. And we're doing all these just keep pushing left, pushing left, pushing left.
No, it's very true. And I very much agree with what you just said, is the realization that, you know, all this complexity that's triggered all these different waves of, you know, air quotes, innovation in the data world, it all addresses individual symptoms of really one underlying root issue, which is the fact that data is stored wherever it is ultimately created. And when someone else needs to access it or reference it or change it, is they store their own local copy of it. The fact that they store it in a different representation of that isn't necessarily the problem. It's that it's a separate copy of that. And how do you keep that copy in sync? And that's where you're getting into, you know, doing integration. And that's where all the complexity lies. And because the data is fragmented, it is siloed, that's why you need to, you know, put Humpty Dumpty back together again if you want to try and build a report or do an analytic or get an insight out of that. That's why you need whether it's a data mart or a data warehouse or a data fabric or a data why you need these things is because of data being fragmented in the first place. So first of all, if you imagine that we had a clean slate, which we don't, but just imagine for a second. So imagine if you were able to re-architect the world, you would not design it such that you need integration. You can, if you apply a data-centric design philosophy into how you build your applications, you're still going to have applications, but they're and applications will still originate data, but they won't store it in a way that is proprietary to the application. It may be stored in a model that is created by that application and owned by that application team, but enabling that data to be accessed, reused, and even changed, you know, assuming the right level of access, of course, by other applications without relying on the need to do this air quotes integration phenomena is really the core of data centricity. That's if you had a clean slate, if you were starting from scratch. Well, of course, unless you're a company that doesn't yet exist and you're going to come into market, you know, a year from now or something, you know, maybe you have such an opportunity, but most people today have existing systems, they have existing architectures, they have custom-built apps, they have on-prem apps, they have SaaS apps, they have all these things that were architected in the traditional app-centric way, where each system is a silo and stores its own data, its own copy of data in its own model, its own representation of data. You subscribe to Salesforce, it has its own model. You can change that, but it's going to store it in a silo. I think it uses an Oracle database behind the scenes or something. But so the question becomes really what you ask, which is, well, if you can kind of see this panacea state, if you were able to get a clean slate, but I'm not starting from there, should I not even try? And the interesting realization that I've had is we're not done building applications. There's a lot more to build. So there's the opportunity really is to change how you deliver change. It's not about rebuilding everything that's already in place. It's not about throwing away existing systems and existing investments. It's about changing how you build the next application, how you do your next integration, how you build your next, again, whether it's an analytical capability or an operational capability. That's where the opportunity to begin the transformation away from app centricity towards data centricity comes into play. So if I'm going to be building 10 new applications for 10 new business capabilities, don't stand up 10 new data stores with 10 new specific data models where you're going to do integration between them. That's the opportunity to apply data centricity right there.
So I'm going to push back on a couple of things there as far as I'm understanding it. So within data mesh, one of the big big benefits is to understand how the data itself is evolving. So a lot of what you're talking about sounds like it is the persistence. It is the current state of the data versus how has the data changed. So I understand that that makes it easier to then potentially share that for analytical use cases. But when I think about things like streams and things like that, it's what has happened. It's the series of events. So it seems like from my interpretation of what you just said, this is again about the persistence. Now, is it that you can make it so sharing those changes is easier, or how do I think about this, and how do I,
Good question.
Yeah, let's jump into that.
Yeah, so it's a good question, and I think the answer is yes, it is about persistence, but persistence throughout time, meaning. As data is changing, whether it's net new created or whether it's modified or whether it's ultimately deleted, the separation of the management of data from each individual application now gives you a unique opportunity to make a more robust universal data layer. Whereas if you rely on each individual application to manage its own data, it's not going to have a time machine. It's not going to have a granular cellular access protections. It's not going to have all the controls and capabilities. I want to see, what the data was like 3:30 a.m. 3 days ago versus today, or tell me the last time this data changed. I want to be able to inspect not only the current data, but the current data is the cumulative effect of all historical changes against that data. I want to be able to query even the changes themselves. The model where you are managing data within each application, it's not feasible for each application to build in all of those capabilities. But if you relieve the applications from the complexity of managing data and you provide it as a service to the applications, you now have the opportunity to essentially create the data layer that solves for what you just explained. It's not about persistence of just the latest live copy of data, but the entire lineage of that data right from its original creation. That's ultimately what you want to be able to interact with. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm getting a little... When I hear that, I start to think about almost data swamp, in that if you're doing that for every piece of data, is it that you're making that decision as to, if you think about an address change for an e-tailer, they probably don't really need to care that much about somebody changing their address other than I need to ship things to this new place. Versus, so Are you then...
Are you worried about storage?
Storing and that you're doing this for every single concept that's there.
Sure.
And when you think about, one company that has a few domains, I think this makes a lot of sense versus when you have a company, I'm thinking of these big conglomerates and you have 8 million domains and then you just end up with this, okay, great, but how do I actually then take this and share this in a useful way? Are you then still packaging that into a data product where that team is still then better able to package that up for sharing? Or how do you think about taking this? And I still do want to circle back on the actual application design aspect,
but
how do you think about packaging this up for the data consumers?
Yeah. So again, if we're talking about in the context of data-centric delivery, so assuming that you're building, let's say you buy into the idea of data centricity and you buy into the paradigm of data where you're going to separate management of data from the individual applications and the universal data layer that you would put in place, whether you build it or buy it, it's up to you, has whatever you would define as the minimal viable control set and capability set that you would want across all of your data. And you could design that layer such that it was configurable, such that what I was talking about earlier around the enablement of a time machine, be it for data or data and metadata, could be configurable for individual data sets or data products. For example, like in our platform, it's not currently configurable. It's enabled for everything, where the view is that by eliminating the need for apps to do integration, you're dramatically reducing the amount of data that needs to be stored. Like if I think of an example, just in a past life, when I was at Citigroup, they had 10,000 plus applications, and each of those applications probably needs to know something about a customer. So how many times is customer data stored? Like a ridiculous amount of times. If you were able to re-architect it such that each context didn't need to restore the same data, even if it modeled it differently, then the addition of the incremental changes over time, it's still exponentially less data to be stored with the added benefits of a true control plane. And if you happen to work in an organization that operates in a highly regulated sector like financial services, the enablement of universal controls is a huge advantage. Being able to see the history of any piece of data, literally a data cell. Where did this come from? Who created it? When was it modified? Being able to do that universally, knowing that you're still storing exponentially less data, is definitely, in my mind, a win-win-win. But that being said, if you're designing your data layer, you can choose to design it such that it is configurable for individual data sets, for data products, for data domains, and make it so that the ability to store that evolution is configurable.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask, is the domain aspect of this, if we are thinking about packaging the information up, again, let's say you do have, you are doing this data centricity, how would you think about creating that data product? And if multiple people can own the same data, if there are different aspects to that, if there's a different metadata understanding of, we had Juana's Rosiers on, and he was talking about the word customer is a bad word because it just doesn't have enough metadata around it. So is it the individual customer and that's underneath a household, and you may have a null household, or it may be a one-to-one but that you're specifying that. So that granularity aspect, and how do you make sure that the domains can package this up and that people aren't just going and saying, oh, I've got this sea of data, I've got to go and kind of spelunk and figure out what I'm trying to do, versus the intentionality of data mesh of I'm going to share my data with you in a packaged way.
Yeah. And so I think the idea of sharing it in a packaged way makes sense, regardless if you're applying data centricity or not. The difference, though, is if you're using data centricity, what you're really packaging is more a point-in-time representation of the metadata, because ultimately what you're discouraging is for people to send copies of data, such that you're providing access to data, not copies. That I think is the first key point there, is that and the second is that the you mentioned, for example, that data can be owned by multiple parties. Well, it actually can't. Ultimately, an individual piece of data, like a data cell, let's say an attribute of a specific entity, regardless of what that attribute is named, but regardless of what that entity is named, ultimately needs to be originated from somewhere. It could have been a human, it could have been software. It needs to be originated from somewhere. So the separation of the data from the applications actually enables the data mesh concept to be extended beyond the analytical plane into the operational plane, where the data can actually be owned by the actual business units that are ultimately owning the business processes that rely on that data, that generate that data. So at least my viewpoint is that data should be owned by the business, not owned by applications.
Yeah, I get that. I'm going through all sorts of, well, what about race conditions and what about, you know, all this stuff, but let's not rat hole on super specific.
Well, and there's a lot of technical complexity that you would need to build into your layer, right? So if you're creating a universal data layer that's used by multiple applications, you know, taking the old legacy failed pattern of a shared database, but bringing that into the modern age where you're kind of blending that with the concept of a data mesh to enable federated governance and separation of deployment, like all those same concerns, standard representation, like all those considerations, is there is a lot of complexity that you would need to deal with, whether it's, how to handle metadata change, data change over time, race conditions, localization, like where is the physical data actually stored, and privacy compliance. There's lots of complexity there, trust me. Smaller organizations may not need to deal with all of that complexity, but bigger ones, like a big global bank, trust me, is going to have to deal with all of it.
There's a lot that we could peel back on, but I don't want to have a 4-hour episode or anything. So one question that I asked, and we kind of went around it a little bit, but a different one that I want to ask first, that I think it could be a yes or no question, is you talked about, are you seeing people deploy a single universal data layer, or are you seeing people deploy data layers for sets of applications? Because that's where I was getting concerned, is that if you have a single universal layer for the entire, you know, especially a bank that's got 10,000 applications, that concept to me just is like, I don't understand how that could work.
Sure. Yeah. And the answer is it's for a cluster of related applications, where that same universal data layer could be separately instantiated for another cluster, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And the other thing is it's not about all data in existing applications, because you're not going to be able to feasibly re-architect the thousands of existing systems such that they no longer store their own data. They're going to work the way they work. You're going to continue to buy new applications that are going to still work where they assume they have their own local data, SaaS apps, on-prem apps. So the opportunity is when you're creating your own applications to apply data-centric design to those applications to enable, you know, your 15 new business capabilities to all interact with a single piece of data without having to do, 10 or 15 integrations. That's really what the opportunity is.
Do you still think of it as microservices in that sense then, when it's applications, because each microservice kind of does its own thing, but like, do you need that? Or can you have like that? Can the micro become micro to kind of a service level or a macro services? How are you seeing that evolve with your
users? So it's a good question. There's lots of, I'd say, confusion over the the role of data in a microservices architecture. And as the role of data gets better understood and changes, what does that mean to how you think about microservices? So it's a really hot topic, I would say, these days. But the way I think of the evolution of code for a second, we started with monolithic and then client server and then three-tier, N-tier, service-oriented architecture, and now microservices. And, you know, what's actually happening there is it's enabling the federated development of this code to deal with larger complexity, because you can't manage this all through a central monolithic code base for the entire enterprise. You need to separate it. If you think of just the evolution, it's how do I separate and enable autonomy while at the same time enabling reuse? Because I need interconnectivity between this. My code needs to talk to your code. And we can do that by having a single code base. We can do that by, I could do a symlink to your code repository and I can compile it inside of my code. I could do that by you compile it, send me your library, and I store the version of the library and I refer to that library. Or we can do that by you giving me an endpoint and I hit that endpoint. So if you think of just the evolution of code, it's gone from single monolithic as the way of enabling interoperability between code, where you need to enable the federation and then add in the capability for interoperability. And the end result of that is that you're creating a network of code. When my service calls your service, which then calls another service, and all that may be invoked by an ultimate, operational application, it's kind of like a network of code. That's kind of what's happening here, right? So it's organizing the code such that it enables federated development, yet enables interoperability between these independently developed pieces of code, these pieces of logic. Well, apply that very same concept to data, and it actually works wonderfully. The problem is we were, I think, confused thinking that the data sits behind the code, and as the code becomes more singularly purposed, more fine-grained, is therefore you're creating more silos of data, not less silos of data, which doesn't make any sense. So you separate the data from the applications, and essentially the end result of that is you're going to want your data to be linked and connected and enabling federated development of data, be it the data itself or the metadata, in the same way that you would want that for your code. So to me, the evolution of code is right in that it should continue to go down the path of smaller, more composability, essentially. And we're just at the early beginnings of the realization that that should be applied to data as much as it should be applied to code.
Yeah. And I think you're skipping, ahead of where I think even the evolution is going. So it's kind of, I don't know if people will jump that far that fast, or if this is,
it's a gradual thing. They won't. It has to be like when we're positioning our product, for example, like it's how do you apply technology to take out pain as you deliver change? The fact that it ultimately can help you get to an end state where you're doing less and less integration with a vision of doing no integration. And having, again, that network of data sitting as a separate plane from your network of code, where your code is really experiences and the data exists once, even if it's represented multiple times. In the same way that, you could use the French word for an apple and I can use the English word for an apple, but we're talking about the same concept. And I can literally point to an apple if I had an apple. I could say this apple, and we could be talking about the same apple. If I take a bite out of it and hand it to you, it's the same apple. The bite's taken out of it. There's only one apple, right? It's that's how you have to think of information. But that's not how it works in an app-centric architecture. So it is very much an evolutionary thing that I think is absolutely inevitable. In the same way that the evolution of software kind of went through this multi-stage journey. I think if you actually go back in time and just replay that, you'll see that it was inevitable, right? The idea of a single central code base to run the world ain't going to work. You need to compartmentalize it. You need to enable composability, right? So there is an inevitability to this, but just because something is inevitable doesn't mean it happens all in one big bang. It's gradual.
Yeah, for sure. So, a lot there, but like kind of circling back to this does take change in how you are, not even just like the implementation, but the thought process. So
yeah.
How are you seeing that thought process kind of happen? Like when you go into a customer, are the application developers, does it take them a lot of time to grok how they would do this? Do you have to do the data layer modeling first? Like how does this cause a slowdown initially to then speed up? Or is this, you know, I'm just trying to figure out how much effort that the application developers also have to understand, or do you have to have data engineers embedded in? So somebody who really understands data is helping them, or how does that work?
So the first thing is the organization, and the organization could be an organizational unit within a large, you know, global conglomerate, or it could be the entire organization. If it's a smaller organization, needs to buy into the idea of moving towards being data centric at some scope of the organization, whether it's the entire global company or a division, where they envision multiple applications collaborating on data as an alternative to integrating on data. If you don't buy into that vision, you wouldn't want to move forward with anything that I'm talking about. You wouldn't want to basically be thinking data-centric. You'd want to be thinking app-centric. So not everyone is bought into that. It's an active debate, is what I would say. I'll tell you, though, that what I'm seeing is that there is more and more A, awareness, and B, acceptance of moving of the need, the pressing need, because of the proliferation of applications, especially as digital transformation accelerates, as everything becomes digitized, that's more applications, not less. In a model where more applications means more integrations, just ain't sustainable. So I'm personally seeing in the market increased awareness and acceptance that is undoubtedly required, and not 50 years from now, like now, is the first thing. And so if you assume, though, that the organization is bought into that, now it gets into your question, which is, you know, what is that lift? Is there, you know, a trade-off? Do I have to go slower in order to go faster? And now you're getting into kind of the change methodology. And I would say it depends. If you go about the change one way, it will result in you going slower and maybe going faster down the road. What I would advocate for is a different approach, which is to never accept any slowdown and demand instant acceleration. And the way that I would suggest to do that is to apply the concepts to the changes that you're going to be doing anyway. So don't create a project and a budget and a team around the idea of moving towards a data-centric architecture. Simply apply it. You know, if you're going to be building a new application, if you're going to be buying a new application, if you're going to be integrating three applications, is applying it to that and expecting acceleration as a result of that. Now, the net effect of that is you're not building out your connected fabric of knowledge all in one shot. It's happening incrementally as you deliver change. But my personal view is that's the only way that you can actually ever achieve progress, is to change how you deliver the change. I've seen so many, you know, air quotes, transformational projects that try and do big bang, and it just never works.
I mean, that's what's happening with data mesh when people are trying to rush into it. But so I'm still trying to dig into, if I'm an application developer, and say I'm listening to this and saying I'm bought in, what next? Like, am I able to affect that change? Do I have to learn new skills? Do I have to learn how the data modeling is going to work? Like,
I see. So it's a good point.
Driven?
Yeah. In some ways, yes, because if I'm building the application, and we're talking about separating the data layer out from the application, as the application developer, how do I interface with that layer? But that layer needs to exist, right? So the first question is, does that layer exist? And if my mandate is to solely deliver on a single application, I'm not going to build the data layer for all the other applications. I'm going to build a data layer that meets my needs. So it has to be an organizational decision to separate the data layer from the application layer. It has to be. And with that, you need people. It depends if you're buying or building. Let's say that you're going to build your own dataware solution internally for an organizational unit. You're going to have a team of people who are building your universal data layer. That's going to be separate and distinct from the teams that are building the applications. And now to your question, which is, I'm a developer building an application, and let's assume for a second that I'm in an organization that's bought into this and has essentially either bought or is building the dataware solution that I'm going to interface with. What I need to understand is, how do I interface with it? Is it over REST? Is it using JSON? Is it using, and all, that's going to be highly dependent upon how the dataware layer is designed. So it will influence and disrupt, and do I need to learn or unlearn? It's going to be highly dependent upon what is the dataware solution, how do I interface with that universal data layer, which is why I think it's important that ultimately we move to standardization of what that layer looks like. Not so much standardization of the implementation, but standardization of the interface into that implementation.
Yeah, I think that point is necessary for pretty much everything, is that we, especially when you start to think about cross organization, everything, is that we need standards around how you access data, how you store data, or what, you know, whatever. So that way, especially when you think about interoperability and things like that for data products. We had Jesse Paquette on, and he was talking about, you know, I was asking this question as to you're consuming this data from external sources into your product, and how does this work? And he was like, well, there are specified schemas within the life sciences domain, right? There are these specified schemas that people already have to meet. So it makes it that it's easier that you can do things because you know that this should be there. And so we need to start to have those types of concepts of standards or whatever to make it that people can deviate from them when it makes sense, but that they have a starting point. This has been a big concern for me with data mesh, is that people have to invent all the concepts whole cloth, because there isn't a lot of examples of this. There isn't a lot of even examples of output ports of, okay, we're going to share with you the different APIs that we use. And so people can do that. They have to design their own APIs, and people aren't used to designing data APIs. So the more that we can create those things that people can evaluate, do I like this or not, rather than I have to come up with the whole concept myself.
Yes, from scratch. Yeah. And there's a couple of attempts to do that. Like if you follow Dave McComb, who's definitely the thought leader in the data-centric movement, he has, through his company, an open model that is intended to act as that kind of bootstrapping. And like one of the things that we're working on at Cinci is we're part of the cloud information model. If you just go to cloudinformationmodel.org, it's something that we're working on with Salesforce and Amazon, and there's a whole bunch of other players there, but the vision there is to essentially do what you just described, is to create a standard for interoperability where there is essentially a common model that represents various subjects that doesn't prescribe that your application need to operate natively off of this, but it enables interoperability, because if I speak SIM, the cloud information model, and you speak SIM, then you know the need for me to map my data structure to your data structure is eliminated, because if my data structure is mapped to this model and your data structure is mapped to that model, therefore my data structure is now auto mapped to your data structure, right? So it enables the interoperability. So it's almost like there's two layers of standards that are needed. One is standard models help reduce the interoperability friction. But the standard that I was referring to earlier is going even beyond that in terms of how to enable the interoperability without the requirement of this standard model in the middle, if that makes any sense. But Does that make sense? Like,
sort of. I'm not. Yeah. It's not fully clicking into place, but I think it will later. And I think I'll have some follow up questions. I think it's just something where my brain at the end of a lot of these is that it's just full up and it's hitting the out of memory error, the processing buffer kind of thing. But yeah, so I think this has been really, really interesting and helful. I'm going to play through it a couple of times to really grok everything that you said. But is there anything that we didn't cover today that you think we should, or is there any specifics that you wanted to clarify or dig a little bit deeper into? Or if not, we can...
I think the one thing that I would want to maybe just emphasize, and we talked about it at the beginning, is the problem of in the real world, data is all connected, and if we want to connect it, we need to link it, not copy. And the problem with that is it's ever changing, meaning it's not like we're ever going to be finished doing the data model for all human knowledge, right? It's a continuous evolution. So the data model itself as metadata is data in that it can change. So we need to accept that and embrace that. And I think historically, what we've tried to do as technologists is try and put in controls that limit the ability to make such change. And we need to actually think differently. And how do we unlock the ability to make that change at absolute scale and address the reasons why we were trying to restrict such change in the first place, right? Is we need to enable schema evolution at scale, and that is the game changer. The difference between a human who has the ability for your brain to rewire itself as a result of learning versus a human who does not is a human who's intelligent versus one who is not. Like, if plasticity, the ability to have schema evolution, is a critical requirement for intelligence. So that's pretty damn exciting. The fact that we're on the cusp of moving away from schema rigidity to schema evolution and flexibility means we're getting to the point where we're going to be unlocking true intelligence in an enterprise and software context. So forget about AI being artificial. Like, we're talking about starting to bring in elements of like natural intelligence, collaborative intelligence. That's really what this ultimately enabled. It is insanely exciting. So it's going to be a fun ride.
All right. Well, thanks so much for taking the time. Where can people find you if they want to learn more or connect with you?
So there's two places. One is Cinchi.com for the Cinchi platform, and right there you can ask us anything, and it will actually you can basically call me directly from the site. The other is if you go to datacollaboration.org, that's our not-for-profit side where we're pushing on the standards. So like the standards that I mentioned, you can read up on them. And if you want to be able to contribute, more contributors, the merrier. So we're running some interesting projects under that. So, and of course you can hit me up on LinkedIn.
Okay. I'll drop all of those links in the show notes just to make it easy for folks.
But, yeah, sure. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks so much, Dan, for taking the time. And thanks so much, everybody, for listening today. I want to thank my guest today, Dan Demers, the co-founder and CEO of the Dataware platform or data fabric provider, Cinchi. If you want to get in touch with Dan or learn more about Cinchi or the cloud information model standard Dan had mentioned, please see the links in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Data Mesh Radio. Hopefully it was useful to you. If you'd like to connect with the show, you can find us on LinkedIn or Twitter. If you'd like to connect with me, you can do the same. If you have feedback, or especially if you'd like to be a guest, we've got some links in the show notes to tell you how to do that. We'd love to hear what questions people have and how I can be useful. And then this is provided as a free community resource by DataStax. So please do stick around after the music if you'd like to hear more about what DataStax is offering with their serverless managed version of Cassandra. Data Mesh Radio is a free community resource provided by DataStax. If you're not aware, I'm actually employed by DataStax, and they've allowed me to be a resource for the general data community, learning about data mesh, data as a product, and other related topics. If you're not aware, DataStax has made a lot of pretty big, interesting changes in the last few years. They now offer a multi-region, very performant, serverless database offering with a number of easy-to-develop-for APIs with like gRPC, JSON, GraphQL, REST. You know, if you'd like to learn more, check them out. You can check out their AstraDB offering, and you can use the code DAAP500. That's DAAP500. Or data as a product 500 to get $500 of free credits. You can also check out what they're doing with streaming. It's pretty interesting.